fish, me, 4 years ago. I used to climb mountains, and I have now to have help to get up on a short platform. Let that be a warning to all of you. Make sure that you enjoy yourselves in the outdoors in a rough country as much as you possibly can. You never know. I'm really quite overwhelmed tonight because there are a lot of old friends here who I haven't seen for far too long. And it's really been one of the benefits of this for me. I didn't really expect to see so many old friends. Most of my adult life, two Alberta conservation organizations have meant more to me than all the others. The Alberta Fish and Game Association has been my heart and soul. The Alberta Wilderness Association, my conscience, goading me on to all sorts of things. The Alberta Fish and Game Association honored me quite some time ago with its highest award, the Fulton Trophy. I am grateful to be honored with the AWA's Wilderness Defender Award and join a group of distinguished previous recipients, many of whom I know or knew, some of whom I have even hunted and fished with and hiked around a bit with. It's a further honor and privilege to be asked to deliver only the fourth of the Kostuk lectures since they got that name. My assigned subject is Alberta's public land, which has engaged me since I started practicing law in Red Deer in 1962. It is a great opportunity you have given me for my last public speech on a topic that I hope we'll all make some difference to after this evening. Over its 45 years, my weekly newspaper column has too often had to eulogize the passing of giants of the conservation movement. Physically, she was hardly a giant, but on April 23rd, 3 years ago, Alberta lost its great earth mother, Martha Kostuk of Rocky Mountain House. It was by her first name that she became known, and the mere mention of Martha could shiver the timbers of Alberta's environmental despoilers. In the fall of 2007, Martha revealed she was afflicted with multiple system atrophy, a rare Parkinson's-like disease that eventually and inevitably shuts down body systems, leaving the victim to die of starvation and suffocation. Martha vowed she would carry on doing what she could as long as she could, and that she, and not the disease, would determine her departure time. Martha died in her sleep in her bed just after dawn, the morning after Earth Day 2007. Martha's longest battle was with the Friends of the Old Man against what I prefer to call the Three Rivers Dam. It was perhaps her greatest triumph when the Supreme Court of Canada ruled that in future, huge dam projects on navigable rivers must receive extensive federal environmental assessments. I'll call on my old friend and client again before I'm done by asking, what would Martha do about our perennial public land problems? I first heard about public land from my father more than 60 years ago. The Gov thought it was bloody marvelous that an immigrant Cockney kid from East London could suddenly become landed gentry, owning in common with all Albertans substantially more than half the land in the province. He was an astute accountant and public administrator and the finest deviler of legislation I have ever known. He loved to grow things and nurture what the modest pieces of private land he occasionally owned could produce, including upland game. He hunted and fished, enjoyments forbidden a man of his class in the old country. He left me a short, sharp, simple land ethic. Look after the land, and it will look after you. And he included public land. Alberta's public land has meant a good part of life itself to me. What I miss most because of my mobility problems is wandering and wading to beloved places I'll probably never see again, most on public land. Gradually, I realized that at least 75% of my outdoors recreations were taking place on public land. Fishing, hunting, foraging, hiking, boating. It's the same for us all, which is one of the reasons Albertans love their public land. Former scoffers nod when I remind them that under Section 3.1 of the Public Lands Act, the beds and shores of rivers, lakes, and streams in Alberta are also public land. Public land is critical to this organization. Most wilderness in Alberta is public land, and you better never forget it. My legal hobby became public land, which the Public Lands Act defines simply as land of the Crown in the right of Alberta. And the owner will be shown on the certificate of title as Her Majesty the Queen in the right of Alberta. Section 102.1 of the Public Lands Act states, quote, the director may, in accordance with this part, lease public land for a term not exceeding 20 years for the purpose of grazing livestock, when, in the director's opinion, the best use that may be made of that land is the grazing of livestock. Almost 20 years ago now, Arlene Kwasniak, staff counsel to the Environmental Law Center, established that a grazing lease is and can be no more than a license to use the grass, and that the public has the legal right of access to public land held under a grazing lease. Over the past 40 years, I have written dozens of columns and articles on public land issues, including frequently informing readers of their legal rights of access to public land grazing leases. That brought major response. On the one hand, insults and threats from grazing leaseholders. On the other, plain brown envelopes from anonymous government employees and officials, documenting how our governments had been deliberately misleading Albertans for years as to what their access rights were to grazing leases on public land. I may have heard from more ranchers than any other Albertan. There's a relative handful that have grazing leases, make threats, and personal insults. I recall a rancher uncle-in-law called me a communist simply for telling the common people what their rights were on their own public land. Then I have heard from many of the vast majority of Alberta ranchers who do not have grazing leases and wonder why. Because they sure would like the far below market rates for grazing fees, they tell me, compared to grazing leases on private land. Not to mention other fantastic perks, which we'll soon get to. Gradually I realized that parsing the words of Section 102, the best use of public land under grazing lease is not just for cheap grass, for the grazing of livestock at all, but for the mining of windfall bakshee money. It is a cash cow, to put it bluntly. Non-grazing leaseholders to this day assert it is continuing utter stupidity, amounting to gross negligence, that public grazing leaseholders are permitted to keep the payments from oil and gas companies for surface disturbances to land they do not own. And further, to sell the lease on land that we, not they, own when they are done with it. No private landowner, and I'm one, no private landowner in his right mind permits either stupidity. Some informants named ranchers they know who make more than $100,000 per year from the oil and gas companies operating on their public land grazing leases, and then sell the leases for big money whenever they wish. One rancher gave the name. He called Alberta grazing leases, or the Alberta grazing lease racket, as he said, cowboy welfare. Worse than anything done to and on American public land. And he sent along the 1983 book, some of you might have read it, Sacred Cows at the Public Trough, by Denzel and Nancy Ferguson. Grazing leases far below the going rate are a U.S. feature similar to ours, and so is the sale of leases on public land, but apparently only when sold with a retiring rancher's deeded land. Here, apparently, you can sell a grazing lease anytime you want, whether or not you are selling your private land. Now, in fairness, I have to say that I am not aware, I have no evidence, that Alberta's grazing leaseholders overgraze and abuse public land, the way the cattle barons of the American West habitually do, according to the Fergusons. Probably because they don't have to, because of the major difference that Alberta public land grazing leaseholders receive that cowboy welfare, rendering the grazing of livestock irrelevant chicken feed compared to that cash cow. If I were to write a book on the grazing lease mess in Alberta, I'd have to title it Sacred Cowboys at the Public Trough. Let me digress to the most recent public land outrage, Potato Gates 1 and 2. The successive recent attempts by our government to sell 16,000 acres of rare and priceless native prairie grassland to a conservative supporter on condition that it be plowed up, irrigated, and probably poisoned, all for the purpose of raising spuds for potato chips. Massive public outrage mercifully battered down both gates, but let's never forget, we can win these battles time and again, but we only lose once. This is all in the great tradition of Sir John A., our first Prime Minister, who rewarded supporters with grazing leases on federal public land in Alberta. It was all federal land at that time, in his time. And thus created many of Alberta's cattle barons. Some of those leases still exist today, I'm told, going back to Sir John A. The brief government press release announcing that Potato Gate 2 was slammed shut, the sale canceled, mentioned that the entire 16,000 acres were already under grazing lease or permit. And I wondered if that could be why farmers and ranchers had joined in opposing the deal. If the director had already determined that the best use for the whole 16,000 acres was the grazing of livestock, and granted the grazing leases, how did the best use suddenly become selling it all for potato chips? And how was the proposed sale for that purpose even legal? The release invited questions. So I asked, how much total is paid annually to the grazing lease or permit holders on the 16,000 acres by resource companies for surface disturbance payments? Dave Ely, Communications Sustainable Resource Development, replied with an interesting version of the answer everyone who asks this question has been getting forever. "No, Bob," Ely replied, "we wouldn't have that information. That is between the lessee or permit holder and the companies." First response is an outraged, "Excuse me? This is a matter of public interest involving public land." But the man is admitting something I've long suspected, that our government has no idea how much money is lost annually to provincial coffers by allowing grazing leaseholders to keep surface disturbance payments, and in total, since the practice accidentally, negligently, maybe even corruptly, got started whenever it did, and nobody seems to remember when. Elmer Cure, Alberta's longtime environmental guru, can't remember when cowboy welfare started, but recalls they wanted to compensate the leaseholder for actual damage to the grass and just went too far. It offends many of us to try to put a price on something as priceless as our public land. But we need to quantify. We need to put a number on what it is capable of producing, of doing for us, before we'll ever counter the insidious concept that somehow public land is wasteland, good only as a slush fund for political patronage. Occasionally, you see numbers in advertisements shedding light on the cozy arrangement that ensures the sacred cowboys thrive and continue their line, whereby a farmer or rancher sells public land by transferring, assigning his grazing leases, with our government routinely rubber stamping the sweet deal. Last spring, a grazing lease on 6/4 sections of public land near my stump ranch was advertised for $498,000, or $130 per acre. Public land grazing leases routinely sell for around $125 to $130 an acre. Not bad bucksheesh money for a mere license to graze the grass on land you don't even own. Such money should be confiscated by our government as an assignment or transfer fee. A prudent owner of private land would do that, or deal directly with prospective purchasers of the lease. How much do the people of Alberta lose annually from this and the other sweet deal, the far below market grazing fees? There are some figures available from private sources that, unlike our government, are accountable to the public. Figures that give us some guidance on the biggest sacred cowboy public land windfall of all, cowboy welfare itself, the oil and gas surface disturbance payments boondoggle. Many years ago, some of you might remember, the Alberta Association of Professional Landmen reported to the late Honorable Don Sparrow that provincial losses could be $21 million annually, possibly even $80 million, from permitting the surface disturbance payments by resource companies for the right to enter and put in their well sites, pipelines, cut lines, etc., to be made to mere public land grazing leaseholders instead of to the owners of the land. Honorable Don, as usual, did nothing. The 5,500-acre Ward or Antelope Creek Ranch near Brooks, formerly owned by the government, was turned over to and is managed by a committee of conservation groups. With the average of about $130,000 annually from the surface, well site leases, etc., on the ranch, the committee has been able to create a model for wildlife and cattle grazing management, plus save money for the future, plus make some grants to other groups to preserve and protect our public land, wildlife habitat, and public access. The ultra-shrewd Eastern Irrigation District, headquartered in Brooks, leases some of its 550,000 unirrigated rangeland acres for grazing too. But it does all the negotiations for and gets the surface disturbance payments from the oil, gas, and seismic companies. The EID, the Eastern Irrigation District, then compensates the leaseholders, the grazing leaseholders, at such a modest level for any actual damage to grass on the lease or disturbance to the grazing operation that it never amounts to more than the grazing bill for the lease. Fundamentally, the EID runs and maintains its superb water distribution operation on what its annual financial statements designate, quotes, compensation from oil and gas operations. And it knows exactly how much money that is because the companies are paying it to the EID, the owner of the land, as they do to every other sane private landowner in Alberta, and not to someone who merely rents the grass. I want you to listen carefully to this. Its annual reports, the annual reports and financial statements of the EID for the last decade show that the EID averages $17,230,000 annually for compensation for oil and gas operations. To put that in perspective, the net from the principal business of the EID, irrigation rates paid by the water users, in 2002 was only $2,150,000. And the next year, 2003, the EID board forgave the water rates and so far have never restored them. It is the compensation for oil and gas operations on its land and not its water rates that pays for the first-class EID water delivery system and keeps the water rates at zero. Thus, the water rate payers, the EID public, share the wealth. And so do we all, through the EID having pioneered the award-winning Partners in Habitat Development Program, and through their generous permitting public recreational access to the glorious grassland and water wilderness of its 550,000 acres. Anyone here that hasn't should try it. It was the first wilderness that I rambled around in as much as I could when I was a kid growing up in Brooks. So how much is the public of Alberta losing when government lets the sacred cowboys, the fat cats who merely rent the grass, lap up the cream of the grazing lease surface disturbance money? Now, I hasten to say that this is not an attack on the ranchers. I don't blame grazing leaseholders for taking the windfall they were accidentally, negligently given. But I do blame these supposedly freest of all free enterprisers for calling me a communist. Or worse, just for championing public access and objecting to cowboy welfare. It could just as well have been Alberta that author Gore Vidal was thinking of when he famously wrote, "America believes in socialism for the deserving rich and free enterprise for the undeserving poor." On the Ward or Antelope Creek Ranch, compensation for oil and gas operations works out to $23.50 per acre annually. On EID land, $31.33 per acre per year. Round it off and say $25 per acre for the 5.2 million acres of public land under grazing lease. And that could be $130 million we are losing annually. Add in what the grazing lease fees really should be if the leases went to the highest bidder, and the money we lose when we permit the leases, the lessees, to sell their public land grazing leases, and the people of Alberta could be losing between $130 and $150 million annually. To help estimate how much surface disturbance money belonging to the undeserving poor in Alberta, or Alberta is handing to the privileged few, our deserving, rich, sacred cowboys, the Alberta government should check with Saskatchewan, which decided more than 15 years ago that the public, the owner, should receive the money earned by public land. Ed Beejan, and there are people here will remember him, then the legendary executive director of the Saskatchewan Wildlife Federation, told me that the owner of public land, the people of Saskatchewan, gets the money from the companies, then talks to the lessee about whether any real harm was done. Sounds exactly like the EID model in Alberta. Many of you will be familiar with the famous 1968 essay, "The Tragedy of the Commons," in which Garrett Hardin highlights how the independent actions of multiple individuals ultimately deplete the resources on the common, on public land, and destroy the land itself. Thus, short-term gains for individuals replace long-term benefits for all. Hardin suggests three solutions: regulate access, allow private ownership, or, far-fetched, decrease population growth. He's totally wrong. The true tragedy of the commons, of public land, is really not a tragedy at all, but the farce of uncaring, negligent governments who do not manage and steward the land remotely competently.
Land and everything that grows and lives on it, and ultimately for the benefit of the owners, the public, all of us.
Apropos cows and public land, There is this pungent statement in Sacred Cows at the public trough. Quote, "It is a well-known worn maxim, but nevertheless true. The power rests with the people. So far, in the administration of public grazing lands, the people have simply shunned their responsibility. Instead of demanding sound and fair policies of rangeland management, the public has been content to condone and participate in its own embezzlement." Now, I don't go as later on, the Fergusons say in the book, fundamentally, that every rancher holding a grazing lease on American public land should simply be turfed off. We don't need them anymore, it says. I don't necessarily go that far. In a notice of my death, Martha Kostick said, "I don't want people to give money in memory of me. If you would like to do more than remember me, then I would ask you to do something extra to benefit the environment. Through the additional actions taken by those who remember me, the environment will continue to benefit." That challenge haunts me. And I have asked myself, what would Martha do about Alberta's public land farce? Most of us knew her. She schooled herself and became a master at environmental jujitsu, using the opponent's own weight against itself, and was a Canadian pioneer in going to court on environmental matters. She could not be scared off by threats of lawsuits, court costs, whatever. She was immensely skilled at forcing government disclosure of important information through its own Freedom of Information legislation, and then persuading officials to waive the huge fees. Just prior to her death, she obtained the reports proving the previous cabinets knew Albertans were not getting what they should for oil and gas royalties, then deposited them where everyone, including the media, could study them. That gives us a suggestion as to what extra we all might do and must do to take back the land from a government that just does not get it. At least two public hearings have concluded that Albertans do not want public land to be sold. Ever. Period. Full stop. That is a policy of the Alberta Fish and Game Association, while the Alberta Wilderness Association believes that, if I understand it correctly, in some circumstances, public land might be sold. The obvious compromise is that public land should never be sold, only leased or licensed, carefully, shrewdly, prudently, for meticulously defined purposes. In other words, the complete antithesis of Alberta's long-running grazing lease farce. Martha, I believe, would go for the throat. Take back the money first, then the land. by getting people's attention about how stupidly and negligently our public land is now non-administered and mismanaged. She would first follow the money to get people's attention, to demonstrate how much the grazing lease farce costs Alberta annually, and how much in total since it started, whenever that was. It is doubtful a Freedom of Information application would give the numbers, but it would likely demonstrate something even worse, that our government has no idea how much of our money it has negligently wasted on cowboy welfare, how much public money has been picked from the public pocket and jammed into the tight arse pockets of those sacred cowboy jeans. Excuse my English. Surely the ultimate mismanagement is to have no idea how much your non-management, your gross negligence has cost the people of Alberta. A consortium of conservation organizations, the Alberta Wilderness Association, and the Alberta Fish and Game Association has people here. There are other good groups. A consortium of groups should have a chat with our new premier, who I believe would be interested in recovering millions of dollars in wasted revenue. Far more than enough to pay for the cuts to education she has restored. Who knows? She might be grateful enough to use some of the recovered revenue to restore the horrendous cuts, renewable resource management, public lands, fish and wildlife has suffered in recent years. You should also see the Provincial Auditor General, and I think that is a priority, and formally request that he use his considerable powers to get to the bottom of the grazing lease farce, how it got started, when, and how much total it has cost the people of Alberta since then. It would be worthwhile to sit down with the Alberta Association of Professional Landmen to find out what their current thinking and numbers are on the subject of payments to grazing leaseholders. Check with Saskatchewan to see if they are still doing it right, and how much the people of Saskatchewan gain annually from oil and gas surface disturbance payments on public land grazing leases. That will get attention to, I think, what's even more important. And that is that you must start demanding better management, administration, and stewardship of our public land generally. It must cease being a political patronage slush fund for the governing party. Public land is a public trust and should be managed and administered as such by a board of trustees selected from among the owners, the people of Alberta. In wildness is the preservation of the world, Thoreau wrote. Well, in wilderness, not necessarily wildness, in wilderness, in our public land, is the real wealth and ultimate salvation of Alberta. It is a renewable public resource, as long as you don't sell it or give it away. Look after it and the other renewable resources that live and grow on it. Carefully maximize and use its earnings wisely. And our public land will look after us, sustain, and yes, recreate us long after non-renewable resources like oil and gas are forever long gone, a mere fuzzy memory. Take up the challenge. Thank you.
I need to have a business association with the ASP and make some challenges.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Bob.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you. I'd just like to thank Bob for.
I came here mainly out of curiosity. I read some of your calls. Many of us to honor those who gave the WA honors. But I just want to thank you for not only incredible information, but for inspiration and for the challenge that you have presented. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Bob. My question is, AWA go about doing some of the things you suggested without really alienating the ranching community, which is actually important allies in, for example, struggles against the energy industry, the transmission lines, you know, important issues in their own right?
Well, I've sort of indicated the grazing leaseholders are a small minority of all the ranchers in Alberta. And the question first arises, how does this rancher get a grazing lease and all the fat perks, and that guy doesn't? Why don't we all have grazing leases? What a cash cow. I'm the stupid idiot who refused one. I was offered a grazing lease years ago on land right adjacent to land I own. And altruistically, I said, no. Let it go to somebody. It's a hard scrabble country out there. Let it go for somebody who really needs it. He doesn't need it at all, but he sure is having fun with all the grazing lease revenues that came up afterwards. Pipelines went through, wells went in. I don't know whether he even bothers running cattle on it. The question is, yes, you are going to annoy some fat cat ranchers, but the vast majority of them don't have grazing leases or public land grazing leases, and they will be delighted to see that rip-off ended. Might even open up the opportunity for some of them to get a grazing lease, actually to graze cattle on. But you'll never, I've gone through this argument with in the Alberta Fish and Game Association. A lot of the members from the south, all terribly worried that they did something about these situations. probably the ranchers down there would cut off their hunting access. To which my answer was, oh, and this organization is against paid hunting? You know, you're going to have to risk annoying, greatly annoying, a minority of ranchers and greatly pleasing a majority of ranchers. But people, you know, the greater good. Right is right and wrong is wrong. And that money, that amount of money, going into the pockets of a very, very select few is plain wrong. And it's especially wrong now when we're all going to start being cut to the bone, cuts here, cuts there, cuts everywhere, to reduce the deficit. The government is going to have to start thinking about recovering lost revenues. And there's lots of them.
Sell them. It's pretty much the same situation. In some areas, they overlap the grazing leases.
I've heard that. I haven't really got into that, but I have heard that the situation you're describing is quite common out in the area south and west of Rocky Mountain House, where my own stump ranch is located. That, in fact, is happening. Right, true.
There's another area where the timber, the forest management agreement holders, they hold the oil and gas companies to ransom, right? They want, the oil and gas company wants to come again onto what is public land inside of the FMA. The forest companies make a killing on the oil and gas leases.
Yeah.
I don't know, is that something we should be... Is that something they should get because the company knocks down their tree? Whatever, I guess. Whose trees are they?
God's. Only God can make a tree.
Yeah, they get the trees. They get the tree salvage. They get the tree salvage. They get the trees and then they get the...
In a related vein, Bob, in some cases, ranchers with grazing leases are excluding the public from those leases, from hunting on those leases, and charging for hunting. I mean, this is something that we're always hearing about. I don't know how often it's actually proven, but
goes on far too long. Not as bad yet here is, again, situation on grazing leases on U.S. federal lands that I was talking about from the book. But what the Fergusons in that book object to is the continual grasping for more and more and more from land they don't even own, that we own, that really upsets them, where they say, we just don't need these ranchers. And that what you talk about is in fact going on.
Has anybody ever been charged with doing that?
There's people that should have been charged with it, but nobody, to my knowledge, has been. Paid hunting, of course, is illegal under the Wildlife Act in Alberta. But you get... You may remember quite some time ago, I forget the name of the defendant, but a young chap was charged with hunting without permission on the OH ranch, Doc Seaman's ranch, with seven 1,000 acres of grazing lease. Why did a multimillionaire like Doc Seaman really need a grazing lease? I think he really needed it because it was prime elk habitat for he and his special friends, not a mere member of the public, to hunt on. And I don't think that any money was involved. It was just, you know, this was a preserve for he and his friends and whatnot and so forth. But the situation does exist, and it will exist more. Certainly they have a right, anybody has a right to keep anybody they want off their private land for any purpose whatever. But they don't have that right with regard to public land. And again, it's part of the public land farce in Alberta that Alberta has spent a lot of time just misleading Albertans as to what their rights are on their own land. And it's all part and parcel of what I'm talking about. It's time for us to quit shirking the responsibilities we've been doing for so long and change things so that public land is managed and administered for the benefit of all of us who own it in common. Well, they're fundamentally the way they are now is they've been taken over, administered by the government of Alberta, who seems to find it a terrible burden and tries to get rid of it as fast as it can. But it's public land. Well,
and then they backed off.
As they always do.
And I'm wondering if you had any insights into the reason that those did not come to fruition at that time.
I thought it was something. Mustn't upset the ranchers. They can sure bawl and bellow a lot like cut calves whenever it looks like any of their perks and privileges are about to be eroded. I'll put it that way. But I do remember the Thurber hearings very well, and it's one of the ones I referred to here, where one of the recommendations or one of the conclusions of the hearing was that everywhere Albertans told them public land should never be sold. And what do we have? I mean, Potato Gate 1, Potato Gate 2, two tries at selling 16,000 acres of really priceless prairie native grassland habitat. The government doesn't get it. And it's time they did. And how the handful of ranchers gets the influence they do, as opposed to the masses of Albertans, ordinary Albertans, I don't know. But I think it's because they ranchers really press their points in all the right places, and we don't. And it's time we started. I don't know how, you know, we try to handle it quickly. Don't wait. The chap that was with me, he had one of these nets that you can weigh them in. It was caught on the Red Deer River tailwater where there's a zero limit. Not that I would ever kill a brown trout that magnificent. But I can tell you that it was 26 inches long.